right. Welcome to episode 13 of 4Js and a Comic Book. Just seems like yesterday.
We're teenagers.
We made it.
Oh, that's why 13 is an unlucky number. It's the first teenager.
I don't know. I like 13. We just had Friday the 13th, too. This is a mellow day for me.
It wasn't a bad day.
You got turned into a turtle.
I was turned into a turtle for about 3 hours, and then I was paralyzed for another, I don't know, hour.
Oh, Justin got the short end of the stick on our last D&D session. Yeah. He spent a lot of time being paralyzed, controlled by another bad guy. I turned him into a turtle to try and save him from being killed to death.
Yes, thank you very much.
Sorry, I mean, it was good.
Thank you for not getting me killed to death.
Well, I mean,
when it actually ended the game, my body was killed. My brain was in somebody else's body.
It was quite a game.
Yeah, very fun.
And then, you know, it's the decisions at 2 o'clock in the morning in the nerd community. It's, do I want to keep this barbarian body or go back to my elf body?
Yeah.
Only questions that will be asked and answered at 2 a.m. in a comic book shop.
That's right.
That's the only place that things would go on.
Nerd world problems.
Nerd world problems.
Well, speaking of things nerdy, and don't we always? Right. First, let me introduce ourselves.
Allow myself to introduce myself.
From our Panda Manga partners, we have JP and Joe.
Pew pew goes the mouse laser.
Pew pew.
Pew pew.
I thought I saw zapow, zapow.
Yeah, I know.
A couple of times. Yeah.
I got to figure out how to, because I've always kind of wondered how you would write these sound effects. Now I know.
And then from our other wonderful podcast partner, Justin Woods from askametalhead.com.
Yeah, I'm not going to pew pew.
Pew pew goes.
You just did.
That pew pewing isn't metal at all.
I'll snick snick.
Didn't something go zeet?
I don't know. Zit, zit. That's a good one.
Yeah. The TIE fighters have a very unique sound effect.
Oh, yes.
If you haven't guessed, we're talking Star Wars tonight.
I never really pay attention to the sound effects.
Really?
Yeah.
You just read them and then just, you hear them.
Yeah.
The lightsabers. You know what they should have? They should have one of those little, you know, the cow goes moo. They should have like
the TIE fighter goes zeep zeep.
The tauntaun goes, you know, whatever.
The Wolverine goes snickety snick snick.
Yeah. I'm surprised Lucas didn't come up with
that. Dude, we should totally do something like that.
That's hilarious.
Put it on Think Geek. Like
geek sounds.
The Han Solo goes, I know.
Being extra nerdy, so I saw on Facebook the other day, someone made wedding rings that the girl's one says, I love you. And the male says, I know.
I know.
Nice.
Good. Good stuff.
That's funny.
So, like I said, like JP said, we are talking about Star Wars. And there is a lot of Star Wars comics out there.
Dude,
I never realized
epic amount of Star Wars
how
comics.
Impenetrable it really is.
Going back to when Marvel owned it.
Well, it's starting to kind of challenge the Star Wars extended universe novels. I mean, if you think, I'd like to read a Star Wars book, it's like, where the hell do you start? There's just a ton of them. It's insane.
So I did a little research. The Star Wars comic actually came out shortly before the movie.
Before the movie?
Before the... Because, you know, they were working off the shooting script
right,
and all that.
Right.
And started in 77 through 1986, 106 issues published, some with better quality than the others. The first six were movie adaptation, then original stories, 39 through 44, Empire, then original stories through Jedi, and then after that, pausing for a second. An interesting thing I found was, Jim Shooter was the editor-in-chief of Marvel at the time, said if it wasn't for the sales of Star Wars in 77 and 78, there was a good chance Marvel Comics might have gone bankrupt.
Really? So yeah. Star Wars saved Marvel?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And
that's pretty cool, actually.
Dark Horse started publishing them in 1991, and I looked on Wikipedia on the amount of comics that have come out from them, and it's like a staggering amount. And reading through what we read tonight, I was reading the back matter, one of the letters pages, the letter that someone had published.
You mean the Star Wars?
Star
Wars.
It's the first time I saw that, I was like, yeah, in my head, you know how, John, you hear the sound effects I heard? Wah, wah, wah.
Some guy said that he read an issue of Star Wars every day, and it took him 2.5 years to read everything that was out there.
Wow.
That's about 875 episodes.
I believe it.
So, whew. Luckily for those that don't want to have to read almost 1,000 comic books. Dark Horse started in 2012 a new Star Wars series called Star Wars.
No subtitles, no hyphen.
Yeah. And it is set in a period where most general Star Wars fans would kind of know. It's set a month after Episode 4 ended, or the first Star Wars movie that was released.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty much directly after the movie ends.
So it's...
They're still bragging about taking down the Death Star.
Yeah. And you get to see the familiar characters of Han Solo and Luke Skywalker and Princess Leia and Darth Vader, all the ones that most...
Chewbacca!
3PO, R2-D2, the foulest-mouthed character in all the movies. Everything he says has to be beeped out.
Oh, God.
They even bleep him in the comics.
That's amazing.
I like him even better now. He's like the Kenny. He's like the Star Wars Kenny.
He's Star Wars Kenny.
I always thought that's where they came up with that idea for.
I wonder.
Huh.
Lucas there, was like, there is a person in the. I mean, like somebody was actually inside the Star Wars. Yeah, inside
a little
on.
Person.
Yeah, yeah, a little person was originally.
Kenny Baker was his name.
It's crazy. Oh my God, he was called Kenny.
Oh! The plot thickens.
There you go. The South Park guys, man, they're brilliant.
I wonder if that had anything to do with Kenny.
Like, I don't think so.
You never know.
I think the idea behind Kenny was, I want to have a character that cusses the entire show and talks about whatever he wants.
And gets away with it.
That they can't edit.
Right.
How can we make a character be able to say whatever we want without being edited or bleeped or anything?
Well, they kind of did that with...
They'll muffle them.
Well, I was going to say they kind of did that in Star Wars ongoingly, in comics and all that, and in the movies with Chewbacca. Where they'd have these conversations, and they could have Chewbacca say whatever he wanted.
Right,
and
well, yeah.
You could kind of infer what he was saying by what Han says. And...
No, you're mother.
Right. Put that back. Chewbacca, the inappropriate boner Chewbacca.
I was...
the inappropriate boner Wookiee.
I was really let down the first time I met Peter Mayhew at a comic convention that he didn't sound like Chewbacca.
Oh, he's British, right? So he was probably very proper and...
I don't think he's British.
No, I don't think so. No? Oh, okay.
The C-3PO guys.
He's British, right? Yeah.
Yeah, very, you know, proper. There's a funny story. One of our friends, Justin, went to a comic convention, and he's a big martial arts fan, you know, martial artist and, you know, swords arts fan. And so, of course, he was very excited to meet...
Darth Maul.
Ray Park.
Ray Park, yeah.
Who also did... He was the Phantom in the second Matrix, wasn't he? He played the brothers.
Yeah,
the...
I think so. He plays a lot of the time something. Yeah, I mean, pretty much whenever
Snake Eyes.
Snake Eyes in G.I. Joe.
Yeah. He plays a lot of the people when they don't really have
G.I. Joe.
Like, you know, he like gets his face covered a lot.
Greatest American travesty. God, those movies are horrible.
He's Toad in the X-Men.
Oh, that's right.
He's what?
Toad in the X-Men, which is like the only time you get to see his face in movies.
And he has lines.
Yeah. So Justin was there looking to meet Ray Park. So he brought a sword and wanted Ray Park to sign the scabbard, I think, was the plan. Mm. And so as they were set up, it's Peter Mayhew that plays
Chewbacca,
right? Okay, so you've got Ray Park sitting next to Peter Mayhew. And what was happening is there was like one line that started all the way to Ray Park, and then people were kind of going down the line. And so the routine was you go up, you see Ray Park at his table, you get a, you know, shake his hand, tell him you love him, get a signature or whatever, and then move over to Peter. Yeah, then move over to Peter Mayhew, and then move over, you know. And so everybody was kind of doing that. So they'd gotten into a rhythm. Justin didn't give a shit about Peter Mayhew. He was there for Darth Maul, you know? And so he goes up and it's like, Ray Park, oh, you're just great. And I'm a really big fan. And could you sign this? And that's awesome. And then he turns after he's done with Ray Park, turns, starts walking towards Mayhew and goes, no. And then he just walks off. And Mayhew looks at him like, what? And so then later, after that sort of awkward exchange, later, after the convention's over, he's standing outside holding all the merch that his girlfriend bought. And then out walks, he hears this pick, 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 and he's got Peter Mayhew's really tall. He's got a Star Wars lightsaber cane, and he walks up and stands next to Justin, and they just kind of look at each other, kind of grunt, and then just stare ahead and just have this awkward, like, 5 minutes. He's waiting for his cab, Justin's waiting for his girlfriend, and just kind of look at each other, and they both had the moment of like, oh, that guy.
That's great.
And then ever since then, whenever Justin is at a convention that Mayhew's at, then inevitably they end up meeting eyes, and they both kind of go.
Yeah, you've seen him like three times.
Yeah, now. Seriously. And there's always recognition, and then,
I don't get it, man. Chewie's like one of my favorite characters.
I don't know. I don't get it either. I would totally have gone over there, but no, Justin our is friend just is like a that.
Huge hater.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
He loves to hate.
He does.
He does. It's just funny that he's whatever made an got, enemy out hate. Of Peter Mayhew. Like, yeah. What? How the hell did he get to that place?
That's great.
But sure enough.
And you know, Peter thinks Justin. Every time he's going to come to a convention in the United States, he's got, I hope I don't see that bearded bastard.
That one freaking that guy.
That guy. Well, he is at like every convention every weekend.
Yeah, seriously.
Mm-hmm. Full-time gig for him.
Absolutely. So which one do we want to talk about first? Because we read two different ones.
Yes, we read the Star Wars and the Star Wars, the Lucas draft, which just came out last week.
Right. Only one issue out so far.
Yeah, one issue out next week. And it's an 8-issue adaptation of George Lucas's original rough draft, which is completely nothing like any of the 1,000 Star Wars comics that have come before this. Any Star Wars we've seen
it's
before.
Very different. It's like there are some characters have been split into two people, yeah. Or I guess later on were merged into one person. There's a lot of the same names.
Yeah.
A lot of the same names.
But some of the same like concept art.
Sure.
But it's different.
Yeah.
Like how the little starfighters were the Star Destroyers.
Yes.
Yeah, they're like two-person ships in this version and not massive, huge.
Yeah, the Star Destroyers, like they look the same, but they're tiny.
Yeah,
it's really interesting to see where it all started.
They're more like Star Annoyers because they're fairly small.
I don't know. Do you want to talk about that one first? Let's do it.
That one to me was the most interesting one because we're all up here like, oh shit, we need to read this again because it's so different.
Yeah.
You know,
so weird.
Yeah.
I thought that it was really good and really compelling, but it was so hard to. How to put it? It was so hard to
untrain.
I just felt like, you know, kind of wrapped up. I had to kind of unravel it or unpack it somehow because it was so similar but so different at the same time.
Well, for me, some of my favorite comic stories have always been the what if stories.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, and this was like a giant what if.
Now, it took it a step further because, you know, what if is, you know, what if Captain America had really died in World War II? This is, what if Captain America opened a hot dog stand on Mars?
And his name was actually Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not at all saying that I didn't like it. I thought it was really interesting and really compelling, but I did find myself having to go, no, bad John, this isn't that Luke Skywalker. Or, you know, this isn't that...
Luke Starkiller.
Luke Starkiller, right. Yeah, it's like, it's different. There's
Anakin Starkiller. It's still Luke Skywalker.
Yeah, he's a general or commander. Yeah,
he's an old man. He's Ben Kenobi.
See, that's what I mean. It's this tangled mess because, I mean, I grew up, just a little sidebar, I grew up being a huge Star Wars fan. Mm. Huge Star Wars fan. I wore out my VHSs. I, you know, prided myself on knowing lots about it. I pored over and memorized technical manuals. I was obsessed with Star Wars. I made a whole series over one summer about a Jedi named Tenel Ka and his journey through the Outer Rim and with my friend Casey, and we played like all the parts. I mean, we had a couple of different characters. We had a couple of different masks and stuff.
That's awesome.
It's great. I will get them for us sometime. It'll make a night of it. It's a very fun romp.
I had all the toys. I remember saving up for, you know, the Imperial Walker and going to all the movies and waiting in line. I used to live in San Jose, and so there's in Milpitas you have the Century. Well, not Milpitas, I'm sorry, but in San Jose you have the Century 20, Century 21. They're these giant domed theaters, and that's where we saw everything. I mean, that's where I saw all the Star Wars,
nice.
Superman, Blue Thunder, you know, Batman, everything, like all the great movies from back in the day. And I remember coming out of there after being, you know, being in the theater and watching Star Wars and Jedi. And
this is it.
Just going, wow, you know.
I was going to say, I felt like reading this, because it was where things came from, that, you know, yeah, they started here and they became something different, but they're similar enough that I found myself having a hard time like compartmentalizing the Star Wars I know so well and going, okay, well, let's put that over there. I can't have these assumptions and make these connections and draw these conclusions about these characters because, you know, if Leia walks on to something, I have this whole huge amount of information packed into my brain about who she is, where she came from, what she's about, her personality, her likes, her dislikes. I mean, all that's in there. And when Leia comes on in this, I have to go, it's not the same person.
Well, when she's she's introduced, she's like 13.
Right.
Or something like that, you know?
Just as an example, though. I mean, there's lots of different characters that, you know, somebody comes along and they're very obviously Darth Vader, but it's not Anakin. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a completely different character. And again, it was like you have to kind of cut off all of your old Star Wars thinking. But once you kind of get yourself into the headspace of like, this is all new information, don't lean into your old knowledge, it's really cool.
It is pretty interesting.
Yeah,
it's a little on the political side originally. Like, this is a weird place to start it for me.
Yeah, there wasn't very much action.
Yeah,
we had like an opening action sequence.
Right.
But it was like a lot of talking going on throughout most of the first issue.
But there was a couple of mind blowers. The introduction of who you'll learn is Darth Vader is kind of a little bit, you're taken aback by that. And then I think it's really important to read the little preface on every one of these, because that gives you a little bit of, it sort of sets the tone for what you're going to read, and it makes a lot more sense. It helps out. I think the art is phenomenal.
Yeah, Mike Mays did a great job on this.
The faces are amazing.
Yeah, the art was really, really standout. And I liked how, again, it was similar but different all at the same time. Like the clothing and the ships and the technology was very distinctly Star Wars, but it had a little bit of a different flavor. And I just thought that was just really cool. I was just reveling in all the cool clothes they had. Like, I love the hats that they have that don't actually cover their head and, you know, and like they wrap around.
They're reminiscent, right? Because in the third, like in Jedi, they have hats like this, very similar, not as bulky, not as big, not as sort of like donut looking,
right?
But, you know, very similar. So there's a lot of the world there, but it's just slight modifications, which I think is really cool.
Oh, it was one, I mean, from cover to cover, this issue was nothing but just nerd boner. I mean, that's what it was. I mean, the whole time was like, this is amazing. It's a peek behind the curtain. This is so cool. I was just like excited. So just vibrating with excitement, because it's just so neat to see something that, I don't know about you guys, but I've often wondered, like, I wonder what it would be like to really, you know, see the source material, understand the genesis from the original idea. Because things, we all know, anybody that's written a story or come up with an idea, it grows and changes and takes on a life of its own. And it's neat to see the original idea.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
I had no idea it deviated as far as it did.
Oh God, I know.
But you can see how it became what it is. Like, how this is source material. It does feel like, oh, I can see how they took these characters and were like, oh, these guys, this should be one person and this and that. And let's move this over here. And this guy's personality is, you know, well, maybe we'll move that. I mean, like, things kind of got shuffled around a little bit, but like all the components are there. It's like seeing a car kind of taken apart on the ground.
Yeah, it'll be interesting in the next couple of books to see where things come together a little bit more.
Yeah, it's going to need to pick up the action beats a lot. Because like you said, it's very wordy.
I think it will.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair, like right out of the gate, there's a brutal scene that just sets the tone of a very dire situation and intense world and dark, dark bad guys that don't have really any moral compass. I mean, they do a good job of kind of grabbing you right out of the gate. But then I would say that maybe the last third of the book is just a wall of just political intrigue.
Yeah.
And it's intrigue, so it's intriguing, but it's not the same as your kind of typical action beats. Like in comparison to the next comic that we'll talk about, it was definitely a little bit more world building because it's building a world. Whereas the other one gets to lean into, I mean, hey, you've already seen the movie. They very clearly expect you to have seen the movie and be familiar with the franchise before we get into this 2012 run of Star Wars.
It's funny because I tend to like to believe that I'm pretty good with change, you know, but as I become a little more honest with myself, as I get older, I realize that like I do struggle with some change. And a couple years ago, my mother-in-law got me a Star Wars book for Christmas or my birthday. I can't remember exactly what the holiday was. And it's been sitting on the little bookshelf next to my bed for, you know, all this time. I've probably cracked maybe 20 pages in it. And I think the challenge I had was that I don't know that when you move outside of the Star Wars that I know and love so much and hold so dear to my heart, you know, I feel like it's almost cheating on my, it's like cheating on my Star Wars, you know? And so I need to go back and read it and just see if it makes the world richer, which I
think is it an extended universe book? Is that what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I can't remember anything about it because like I said, it sat on my little bookcase for so long. And I'm a fairly voracious and avid reader. I mean, I read Ready Player One in like 3 days. I mean, I just burned through that book. Yeah. I could not stop reading it. And so
it's a page turner for sure.
Yeah. Hmm.
It is. It's odd, isn't it? To have something that supposedly is canon, but at the same time seems to have a little bit more freedom.
Well, I really struggled, honestly, really struggled with this version of Star Wars, but I gave it a lot of leeway in
this,
that.
The I know, Star Wars?
The Star Wars, yeah. Knowing that, you know, it's very, very early, early. And so, you know, I read it a couple times. I didn't hate it. I need more. I need to see where they're going to go with things. I need to see where the story goes.
I think this one will be fun when issue 8 comes out to sit down and
really have a complete thought with it. We should come back. We should totally revisit it
that's a good
when
idea.
The full trade is ready. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to do that. And then Dark Horse had published this series called Star Wars Infinities, which were literally three what if books.
Oh, cool.
Oh,
yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Those are. It'd be fun to reread.
Justin's
those.
Gritting his teeth over there.
No, I was like, hey, deviating. What if Skywalker was a Wookiee? That'd be sweet.
You know, it's kind of like the first one was like, what if Luke missed a shot on the Death Star? And And then the second one is built around Empire, and the third one's built around.
Interesting.
Jedi.
Interesting.
Yeah, what are the big? What if, you know, you never went to meet with Yoda?
I think that's one of the reasons, and I harp on it over and over, so I'll be quick, but that's one of the reasons why I often use Star Wars as a reference for building a giant world and then being able to tell little snippet stories of a pocket of information or a time or a season of this person's life or that person's life, or because it's so big and it's so rich that you can tell stories that don't necessarily have to be this one big encompassing story that completes the whole universe and changes everything and ties it all together. You can have a story of what it's like to, you know, be a moisture farmer. It's like, why not? You know, there's so much story.
That is a white knuckle ride right there, let me tell you.
Well, but you know what I mean? Like, there's so much there. You know, a character walks in front of the screen and he's got a whole backstory. There's a race. There's somewhere written down.
The droids are breaking down. They got to get new ones. Call them the damn Jawas, but they're late.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so much there. And so that's, I think, I love that about this series. And it's really cool. I actually, contrary to what you were saying, Justin, about being wary of jumping into the extended universe books, I love the idea of digging in deeper. The problem is that you've always got that, but is this really what happened? Because there is a canon, in theory. Mm-hmm. There is a one way, you know?
I have a question. You and Joe are a decade younger than Justin and I.
Uh-huh.
So Justin and I have, like, deep childhood memories of, like, when Star Wars came out the first time, going to the movie theater. And you guys never got that experience, because even when Jedi came out, you guys were, what, like, 2?
Yeah, it was 86?
83 was when Jedi came out.
So yeah, I wasn't born yet.
Yeah, I was the year before I was born.
So. I mean, I waited in line for hours to see Jedi, and I waited in line for hours to see Empire. I was too young at the time for Star Wars, but I saw Star Wars.
See, I remember vividly going to see Star Wars.
I do too, but I don't remember waiting in line. We might have seen it at the drive-in. I can't remember exactly.
Wow. I would have loved to have been able to see that.
Yeah.
And because it's, at the time, was so incredibly revolutionary. The technology they used to realize a space battle was mind-blowing. And it still holds up, I think.
Well, I always think that, you know, the miniatures always look better filmed than CG.
Yeah, agreed.
You know,
if it's done right, I mean,
yeah,
that's the biggest problem I have.
I remember standing in line to see the re-releases in the 90s. And, you know, being a teenager and having grown up with Star Wars, that was a big deal. And, yeah, the CG was pretty bad, but it came out in the theaters.
Yeah, that was a really big deal. But I have to admit, I was really not happy with those. I mean, before those had come out, I had harbored and felt like I was alone in this because I was, you know, I was born in 84. You know, so like I was totally not in the generation that's supposed to appreciate Star Wars. You know, it was like my parents, you know, or, you know, even younger, but it's
older,
like,
older cousins kind of.
Yeah, thing. Exactly. Like, yeah. I mean, you know, I was kind of 10 years too early because you guys obviously were able to be there in the middle of it. And so I distinctly remember feeling like I was alone and harboring this fascination with it. I just felt like it was sort of, I was sort of starving for Star Wars stuff because I was obsessed with it. And I read as much as I could about stuff and, you know, collected a bunch of things, but it's not like it is now where it's just everywhere and all the toys are really awesome. And it's like kids are so spoiled these days if you happen to be a Star Wars fan, because if you go out there, you can get the coolest shit. The coolest shit.
I don't know, man. I think the toys we had back in the day were maybe a little bit like maybe a little bit cooler. I mean, yeah, but my Imperial Walker didn't walk itself, and I'm kind of glad that it didn't walk itself. You wanted it to move, you had to articulate the legs. I mean, you could stick your arm in the body and turn the head, and it would, you know, there's a little button, and you had to make the sound effects yourself. No, the little things would do. You could put guys in there and all that. But
how did your action figure survive?
My action figures did not do well because I had a little brother. All my G.I. Joes and all my Star Wars stuff, gone.
My mom and stepdad would get furious at me because within a week, I'd have a head popped off of like the new one.
Oh, no.
And they're like, what do you do? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just, you know, just playing with it, just you know.
Popped off. Good old
it
Mattel.
Just popped off. And my stepdad worked in aerospace. We got like this glue they used on the space shuttle to glue the heads and back on. And within a day, you know, I broke again. How the fuck did you do that?
Because you know? You're playing with them.
Little kids are playing brutal, with them. They're hard on their stuff.
A lot of our stuff, you know, as we got older, a lot of it I gave to my little brother, and then it just got destroyed. And, you know, I've never been one to keep stuff like, oh, this is going to be worth money. You know, I have always like, they're my toys. I'm going to play with them.
Use it.
You know, yeah. I mean, I had like, you know, just speaking for a moment about like G.I. Joe, you know, I had every G.I. Joe thing that there was, including like the, I had the jet with the it was like a, it was like an F-13 or not F-13.
Did you have the aircraft carrier?
I think my brother got the aircraft carrier. I had the helicopter. I had all this stuff. Did they have an aircraft carrier?
The aircraft carrier was huge. It was designed to fit underneath a twin bed. So that's how big it was.
I remember we had, maybe we had the base.
That's amazing. Yeah.
I have a horrible, so anyway.
So, you know, in school, there was one kid that fucking had that, and everyone was like, fucking dick.
Yeah, right. Because it was probably $100.
Oh,
right. It was expensive.
At least, yeah, I mean,
I remember getting the Millennium Falcon for Christmas and losing my shit because I got the Millennium Falcon for Christmas. Like, I remember opening the box, and it was, you know, back in the day, there wasn't all this weird box stuff. You pulled out the Millennium Falcon, and you pretty much just had to put the little radar on top, and, like, you were there. You had to put the decals on.
Yes.
And so, like, I wouldn't do it myself because I wasn't coordinated enough to do it. So I was like, I got my mom to help me, but I remember. I mean, I just lost my, you know, the, like the little videos of kids that you see on YouTube back in the, back in the 80s, when they got the Nintendo, like that was me, like crying, blathering because I got the Millennium Falcon.
That's awesome.
The very first movie on VHS after we bought our $800 VCR, the very first movie we rented was Star Wars, and we brought home Poltergeist because if you rented one, you got one for half price. Those were the first two movies we ever rented, Star Wars. And we watched Star Wars like 5 times that night, back to back, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars, Star Wars.
It's good stuff.
And so that's, you know, my childhood. I was Luke Skywalker.
You're a Star Wars geek, man.
Yeah, I was Luke Skywalker for Halloween. But I never got into all of the, you know, like the technical manuals and all that stuff.
I didn't either, and I'm wondering if it's almost like a generational thing because we had the movies, you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I think it might also be a personality thing too. A lot of times, I don't mind having the story told to me and just accepting it that way. There's certain areas where I'm not like that, but there are certainly different. Like, and I think Star Wars because we were so young, you just told me that that was the way it was, and that was the way it was. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, I think for me, for getting the technical manual, I don't know if that's what I would have chosen if I had all of the options that are available now or maybe were available when you guys were kids. But I really genuinely feel like for Star Wars kind of merch and stuff, there was a little bit of a lull, dry spell in there in the middle-ish time, it felt like. And so I went to the bookstore and there were a bunch of like, I mean, I'm a kid. And so there was a bunch of like adult reading novels that were too heavy for me. Mm-hmm. And there was a technical manual with lots of pictures.
Lots of pictures. Oh, right? Pictures of everything. Right,
exactly.
Right?
And so I thought, that's what I want right there. And because that's all there was. There wasn't, you know, a bunch of little kid books and a bunch of this and, you know, all these different things. And that was my stomach.
Wow. I hella thought there was someone downstairs.
Oh, sorry.
I thought I heard someone. Johnny.
Whoa. That was your stomach.
And I'm like, what?
Jeremiah?
I'm like, did we lock the door?
No, I did not.
I thought I heard an animal in like the air duct.
I'm sorry. That was my stomach.
It's in his anus.
My stomach grumbling.
Are you hungry?
I think I might be.
I mean, I remember the first time. So, you know, I saw the movies in the theaters. I had the original VHS tapes. And then I remember buying whatever the, you know, the platinum version. I guess it would have been late 90s. Something came out they, and I remember when they redid it, it was like the three, you bought all three videos on the same, in the same.
And not, the old golden Vader head.
The golden Vader. Right. It's the good stuff. And I remember putting in Star Wars and I was, I think I was going to like marathon with a friend of mine who hadn't, it was either my ex-wife or just wasn't as into it as I was. Like, well, watch all of them. You'll get it, right? You'll get it. And I remember the scene when Han is sitting with Greedo at the bar. And I remember seeing what happened and pausing the movie going, and like something inside of me was like, there's something fucked up about that scene. What is it? I can't put my finger on it. Like, what is wrong with this? It doesn't make sense. And then I'm like,
such a burn in your brain.
And then I'm like, you like rewind it and play it again. And I'm like, what the hell was that? You know, like, what did he do to my Star Wars? Right? I got so angry. I
mean, for me, it was seeing the digitized Banthas, you know, instead of being the elephants with woolly chin on,
you know there. That we did an entire Geek Life podcast over on Pandamanga about Lucas's incessant need to fiddle with his movies. I looked up a giant list of all of the different tweaks and modifications and stuff that have happened over the years.
It was like over 200 changes it's just insane. In that series, wasn't it?
It's insane. And the thing is that it didn't start with the re-release updated version. He's been fiddling with them for a long time.
Oh, yeah.
Like a long time. All these little tiny tweaks, changing the sound on this, adjusting this, using an extra clip here. All these little fiddly sort of stuff that really not necessary. And just a huge amount of just silly, fiddly, tweaky sort of stuff that I guess for him, he felt like it was bringing it closer into alignment with his vision.
Yeah.
But it is to the point of ridiculousness, to the point of like, you know, it almost reminds me of some documentary I saw about people who are addicted to plastic surgery, you know, and they just can't stop and they just keep putting more and more. And then pretty soon they look like a dog or some kind of a crazy panther person. Well, I mean, and like, that's what it feels like. It's like he just like compulsory, like cannot control the need to fiddle with it.
Nobody ever told him that if you keep playing with it, you'll go blind.
Yeah, for everything that we love about Lucas, I think there's just as much that we sort of don't love him.
It's always the quiet one that gets, you know, the zinger.
Joe slips him in there sometimes.
I've been sitting on that
one. It's a slow burn.
I thought you were going to be the reason why Jabba Hutt is so angry is because he's so good at cunnilingus. Look at his tongue. It's always sticking out. Damn it.
That's your natural loop. That's me.
Oh, just move your arm over there.
Did you guys notice that there was a scene, I can't remember where it was in it, and I'm sure we'll find it, we're going through the other one, but in the 2012 Star Wars from Dark Horse, there was a scene where Han was in a tough situation. Oh, no, he was talking to Mon Mothma's contact, and he shoots first.
Right. Shoots him in the back, even.
He shoots him. Yeah, but that, I just love that. I like set my phone down and started cracking up.
We should talk about this. Actually, after everything that we've said about me not being able to sort of accept slight differences, I actually really enjoyed this. And there's a couple of things specifically that I really enjoyed.
The Star Wars?
I know. I did enjoy the Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong.
But the 2012.
I'm more challenged by it. Mm-hmm. But the next thing we're going to talk about is it six? Or, I mean, the story is a six book arc, right?
Well, the first trade of 2012 Star Wars went six issues. Just came out today at the comic store. They are through 9 issues of the comic. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's going to be about a 20-issue run because I think that is when Dark Horse's Star Wars license expires.
Interesting.
And with Disney now owning it, I can't see Marvel not publishing Star Wars comics since they're owned by Disney.
Right.
So it'll move.
Star Wars returns to Marvel.
Well, there'll still be Star Wars comics. As long as that's happening, all will be well in the universe.
Yeah, but Dark Horse has done a solid, like, almost 25-year run on it.
And yeah, long time.
So there's interesting things that they do with this.
Yeah, it's written by getting to the Star Wars comic that debuted in 2012, not the Star Wars that happened in 2013. It's written by Brian Wood, who
is DMZ.
DMZ, Northlanders.
Yeah.
Not someone you would picture writing a Star Wars comic.
Yeah, it does very visceral.
His punk book, Channel Zero. Yeah. Very anti-establishment, kind of apocalyptic, Vikings. Yeah.
That is what the Rebels were all about. You know, that's true. Anti-establishment.
I'm glad that they took some time and...
Of how it's a story of a farm boy that's enlisted by terrorists to to take down the
government installation.
Yeah.
No, what's the city planet?
Coruscant?
Coruscant, right?
Yeah.
So I was going to say, I love how they actually have...
Isn't it Coruscant?
Coruscant.
Coruscant, whatever. I've heard it said many different ways. But Coruscant, whatever. Coruscant. I love how they actually take the opportunity of the comic to have Han go down into the deeper levels and deal with that.
Oh, yeah.
Because I always thought that was one of the coolest and most compelling things about that planet in the time of the Rebels, is that it's been a city that's built upon itself so much that at this point, the upper levels are what you expect when you go to Coruscant, but then you go deep down, and it's like you don't get light, and it's run by gangs, and it's all these like just crime and terror and darkness, and it's completely different if you go hundreds of levels down. And he actually had to go down there to try and hide and find a way off planet because he got discovered while he was there meeting Mon Mothma's contact. And I just thought that was brilliant, because I always love it whenever they go into that. And whenever they go to Coruscant, I'm like, oh, go deep down, find some reason to go down deep, because I want to go see what's down there. Because it's just such an interesting idea. I think they did something like that on game Knights of the Old Republic, but I don't think that it was that planet. But, you know, it's cool when they go into that kind of stuff where you don't normally see, or you don't really have occasion to when you're in your sort of normal Star Wars romps. They're up top, because it's all political stuff and wealth and everything. But it's cool to see what's down there.
The underbelly.
Yeah, so it was cool for him to, like, run into, you know, and be down and be called Pink Skin, because it's mostly aliens, non-human aliens down there, and, you know, getting chased around by stuff, and double crosses, and...
And Boba Fett.
And Boba Fett. Always Boba Fett.
Yeah, the story, basically, as John mentioned earlier, it's right after the very first, the very first Star Wars movie that came out, which is actually Episode 4. So they've blown up the Death Star. Vader has pretty much come under scrutiny from the Emperor, and he's been kind of demoted a little bit. So he's kind of been stuck on the new Death Star that they're building.
Which he feels is very much beneath his abilities to administrate.
It's a kick in the lightsaber for sure. And so Luke and Leia and a small team are essentially, they're looking for a planet for the rebellion to start
growing.
Yeah,
they're looking
again
for what eventually will become Hoth.
Right.
You know, they're looking for what they'll eventually find Hoth. Right. And they're trying to find, and they keep getting like ambushed.
Right. Every time they show up someplace,
right,
and they have all of these security things in place, like they light jump from different places at different coordinates, and it's all random.
Yeah, it's never straight in one line. They bounce around.
And every time they get there, boom, Star Destroyer, like huge, massive, like the crown of the Empire's Star Destroyers, actually basically Vader's Star Destroyer, which is now, he's been demoted from it. Now he's someplace else. Now this new sort of kind of, you know, ambitious young general is taking over.
Well, and it's not even so much just that a Star Destroyer finds them, because they are actively looking for the Rebels.
No, but I'm saying
they have TIEs launched immediately.
Right, right.
Like they're prepped and ready, and
it's
and they're on top of them. Yeah. So it's like there are things stacking up that it's not just they keep getting found. It's like they know where we're headed, and so there's a leak.
Yeah, there's a mole in the rebellion, and they're trying. You know, Leia, and this is the interesting thing in the movies. Luke is more of a strong, he's sort of the stronger, action oriented kind of guy. And in this story, Leia really takes over that role, and she's commanding the sort of quote unquote team. She's second in command, or she's got a much higher call.
Oh, yeah, she's higher ranked than him. It's cool because from the first movie, he goes from being just a farm boy.
He's the farm boy.
And then when we come back at The Empire Strikes Back on Hoth, he's Lieutenant Skywalker. He's already
a soldier.
Right. Yeah, well, but he's already gained rank. I mean, lieutenant's not somewhere you start.
No.
You know, and so he's gained rank, and this is how he actually gets promoted by Mon Mothma to lieutenant in these comics.
Right. Which is really, I mean, it's great. It's the middle. It's everything in between. It's the filler but it's also really, you know, it's good. I love that they pay attention to doing really interesting things. Like, for example, at one point they get these new gray X-Wings that are like super stealth X-Wings. They're top of the line.
Honestly, that was one of the things that bothered me the most.
I thought it was cool.
I thought it was really cool until I thought about it a little more and thought to myself, wait. Why aren't they using these in the later movies? Why aren't they around?
They change. You know? Well, again, this is the side plot, right? So
yeah, I know. But I guess what I'm saying is that, you know, it's always odd to me when a story that is happening or filling in the blanks between earlier stuff from where we already have media and material for, and they come out with this special new high tech stuff that just does not exist in the future.
That was the real hard. That was for me the hardest thing about the transition between the original movies and the new movies that just came out in the last decade. Were I always thought that the technology went backwards. Like, how do you have all these sleek chrome colored ships and everything is aerodynamic and all this stuff, and then prior to that, everything was blocky and square. Now, towards the end of it, you can see things getting blocky and square. But there was no reason for that. You know, it was
styled in the times in this world, what was cool and interesting then. And then, you know, later on when they come back and they make the later movies, we've, you know, as a culture shifted our interest in what we think is cool. I mean, you look at the old.
But the ship design should have stayed the same.
I agree. And that's my complaint here is that even though the ship design is the same, it's like, why do they have better technology that never shows up again in the films or in the extended universe stuff, at least as far as I know? You know what I mean? It's just odd.
Yeah. I always thought with the why the ships look so much beat up in 4, 5, and 6 versus 1, 2, and 3 was there has been 25 years of war. So
sure, but I mean, even the stuff like even looking around here on Coruscant and stuff, you know, the other ships that are around that are like the Imperial ships, like Justin was saying, they're not, you know, sleek, mirrored, slippery looking ships that look like something out of, you know, modern UFO sci-fi in comparison to back then where, you know, it was clearly like, you know, metal panels welded together, you know, I mean, even if they were really
it looked built.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, even so, it's not so much that they look worn out and trashed because they should for the Rebels anyway. You know, the Imperials, their stuff is all sparkly and clean, but it still it has that industrial look to it.
Well, instead look, a TIE fighter like, is sleek. A TIE fighter. It looks like a TIE fighter.
Yeah. And you're right. The early movies, things looked sleeker.
Well, it wasn't necessarily there was... Well, when you say early movies, are you talking about...
The 1, 2, and 3.
Okay, right.
Chronologically earlier.
Right. Everything is... everything, including, you know... I don't want to get sidetracked by talking about that, which it's great because I think it does fit. Here we are talking about something as simple as a gray-colored TIE fighter that just happens to have
some extra cool stuff
that makes them more stealthy and...
And then it has on like the medical upgrades and some sensor upgrades. And
the important thing I feel like is not that they don't ever show up someplace else, is that they took the time and care to get you mentally involved in the cost and the back end, right? What did he say? Something about it cost 5 billion credits. It was some astronomical number that the Death Star cost to build, and now that just got blown up. And like, you'll never get that money back. You know, you blew that, right? And so now we're talking about the cost of war. How much it costs to run a war.
The economy going into it.
The comics can tell a story at a little bit more of a relaxed pace because it's not, you got to get done in an hour and a half.
Right. I don't need, and even in the last, you know, the movies, right, they never describe, like, somebody goes to the planets where they're making the clones. And you see all these just, you know, like what would basically be like miles and miles of clones. And you're like, wow, okay, cool. You know, they just make them. But nobody ever said, okay, like, here's a check, right? And you never think, like, the Rebellion, they're the Rebellion. Where are they? Who's funding them? You have all of these planets that are basically, you know, the Empire is massive. And one of the challenges and what's coming up is that ultimately the Empire is basically attacking planets that will not yield to their desire for them to not support the Rebellion.
They're putting pressure on those planets to not support the Rebellion because of the Death Star. That's the whole reason they made the Death Star. It wasn't because they were afraid of the Rebels and they wanted to blow the Rebels up.
No, they could blow up a planet with it. Like, if you're going to support the Rebels, boom, your planet's gone.
Right, exactly. I mean, Alderaan was a demonstration.
One. Yep.
It was a demonstration one. Saying like, oh, okay. Alderaan had pro-rebellion leaning, so gone.
Gone.
Now are you going to have pro-rebel
like, who's
leanings?
Next, right? How about,
yeah, exactly. So that was, it's interesting because you look at it from a different perspective when you're coming at it through here because, you know, in the movies, like, the Death Star is bad and that's the Empire and the Rebellion's good. And so the Death Star is for killing the Rebellion. It's like, not really. And that's not the point. And there's a lot more, like, tactics that they go into here when they talk about the loss of the Death Star and what it meant and what it was for.
Well, in the movies, actually, you know, there was many reasons for destroying the Death Star. Oh. One, because they blew up a planet with it. Two, Darth Vader was on the Death Star.
Right.
He narrowly escapes by basically getting into a TIE fighter and chasing down.
That really kind of happenstance, all things considered.
Right. So there's reasons why they did it, you know, obviously, because now, and again, if you're the Rebellion, if we can blow up any planet we want, then there's nowhere, you'll never be on a planet that's safe because they can blow any planet up.
And that's the beauty of it, is that there's extra tactics and planning that goes into it that, you know, we weren't really thinking about before. Right. But they're putting political and warlike pressure on the whole solar system, saying, like, we'll blow you up too if you help the rebels.
Well,
and that's why they chose Alderaan. Not just because Leia was on the ship and they wanted to be mean to her to squeeze information from her, which is almost what that scene makes it feel like.
Right.
Like, there was a lot more reasons behind that.
And the other thing is, like, you know, the Empire can say, look, we're not going to just embargo your, we're not going to embargo your city. We're going to embargo your planet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll dock destroyers off the planet. Anybody that shows up, toast. You know? So, I mean, you have this huge political thing going on, but then also you have this giant war that's going on between the two, and obviously the Empire is massive, and the Rebellion is very small.
Kind of oppressively massive, right. Really.
And so the reason why Han and Chewie go to Coruscant, whatever it's pronounced, we'll find it and I'll read it, is because they're sent on a mission by Mon Mothma to basically buying something huge because he had a whole lot of money. And that's one of the things he was saying. Like, I'm nervous carrying around all these credits like in tin cans, you know? So, I mean, you can see the state of the environment. And that's why I think there was only a very small amount of those X-Wings purchased, because it would take time to build them. It would take time to ship them. It would take time to, you know, to get them there.
I got the sense that they were given by INCOM. Because INCOM secretly supports them.
Donation.
Yeah, I didn't get that out of it.
They look so freaking cool, though.
They are cool. They're great, you know. And actually, that's what, you know, when you would ask what happened to all my toys, we would basically take masking tape and tear masking tape up into different little shapes and tape our stuff and then spray paint it, wait for it to dry and peel the tape off. And you have these killer camoed, like, you know, all my G.I. Joe stuff was camoed. All my Star Wars stuff got camoed.
Nice.
And, you know, that's what we were doing with it. But so in the course of telling the story, you know, Leia, she gets hurt, but she's okay. And you meet, you know, Darth Vader, and Darth Vader kind of gets he gets taken down to knees a little bit by the Emperor.
And but he's so brilliant because he's always working behind the scenes, and he ends up roping in someone who has some Force sensibilities later to work for him kind of under, you know, covertly.
The one thing I did struggle with is, in the movies, the Force is very early on explained. You know exactly what the Force is. You see the Force used. You're very comfortable with the Force. In this case, they're kind of peppering you a little bit. They're just giving you a little bit of information about the Force. Yeah. Like, you know,
Luke hasn't even figured out how to levitate stuff.
Right. He knows.
He wasn't even sure if that was actually Ben or if he was just hearing it in his head.
Right. And then Leia hears it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I love, you know, how Boba Fett is chasing down Han and Chewie. And like, this was, I don't want to say it was a revelation for me, but it was really fun to read, and I'm definitely looking forward to more of it. I think the battles and the way that they talk about their ships and the way that they control the ships and stuff is really cool, because at the end of the day, if you really break this movie down, the funnest parts of this movie are the dogfights, right? You know?
Oh, and they did a masterful job of making it feel dynamic and exciting.
Oh, yeah.
The dogfights. I, you know, when you're talking about the technical knowledge and all the just sort of Star Wars tech jargon that they bounce back around, and it, you know, it's so much stuff that we don't really understand, but it's, you know, there's similar, and I mean, there's recognizable enough words that you're like, oh, this is what that's for, and this is what they're trying to accomplish, and everything like that. I think that Brian Wood must have done an obscene amount of research into, I mean, talking technical manuals. He must have done a huge amount of research into all that to be able to have them toss that jargon around so casually and comfortably, mm-hmm. you know, instead of, because he doesn't shy away from it at all. I remember a part where they're looking at the new X-Wings, and there's like it's like a pulled back sort of scene establishment shot, and this special, you know, secret crew of guys that Leia has set aside to try and continue the mission to find a new planet for them to make the Rebellion's new home. And they're just standing
shop.
Around and they're just talking shop. Yeah, exactly. And
so, oh yeah, now it's this new system shaving half second off of this.
Yeah, they move the sensor, you know, to the nose, and they're like, well, wasn't that going to make it work? And like, well, actually, it makes it a little better because this,
right.
this, and they're talking. It's like, shit, that's cool.
That's exactly kind of what I was talking about. Yeah. It's like, they give you some insider stuff on you know, on the equipment, you know? And I love, there's a little sneak, like one of the very first panels, probably the third page in, when when they come out of Lightspeed, Leia's talking to Luke, and there's just on off the sides of the panel, there's his lightsaber. Like, you can see his lightsaber kind of like, if you would have it sort of at his knees, like right. where his, that was my little nerdgasm.
I really enjoyed it.
And then, you know, they like seeing him spacewalking, which you would never, I mean, you never see that. And the way that they called it, they talk to the droids and the way that they, the names that they have for the droids and stuff like that, it's really fleshed out in a way that was never described or detailed in the movies. And so I think that the way that this is approached is it's sort of shining light in darkened areas of the plot and of the theme and of the history of things.
Oh yeah,
that you wouldn't.
It's filling in
see.
All of those. Man, yeah. Well, I wonder if or how did they or how did they get here or like, what happened
would,
this. Or,
what would pilots really talk about?
Yeah,
you know exactly.
Yeah. I guess it's great that they're able to tell the story at a more leisurely pace because they're not again under that you know hour and a half movie time sort of thing. You know, yeah, you get that sense of I mean, you have that sort of. Time to be able to have those kind of conversations and dig into that information in novels, but this being, you know, a comic book, it's kind of in between, and so you get to see more, and it almost you almost expect there it things to be a little bit more abbreviated in comparison, but they don't shy away from really digging into the information. It's just totally interesting.
Really makes me want to go seek out another Millennium Falcon,
right?
But I just know that would be bad news. Just like, we you should... spent what?
Okay, you start collecting the toys.
No, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. It's all up here in my head. I'm very happy with that. So I would say if you're a Star Wars fan, this is something that I really enjoyed reading. And it wasn't so far off of the, you know, off the range.
Well, I mean, it's definitely all the characters that you should know.
And is this considered canon? Or
I believe so.
Yeah.
Well, I think in the extended universe, like actually written and published between A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back, there was a book and a comic series called Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
That was a book. Yeah, and it was adapted in the comic.
Yeah.
But I don't think it was ever considered canon. It was the first Star Wars novel.
Okay. Because it was, from what I understand, it was really bad.
It was a fun book for the time, but it was playing up that whole Luke having a crush on Leia thing.
Yeah.
That, you know, obviously later had to be retconned out.
Yeah, actually, that was one of the interesting pieces here is that there's a little bit of jealousy when Luke is getting cozy to another one of the hotshot pilots. And it's kind of like not necessarily overt, like I'm interested in. I mean, this is Leia talking, like Leia being interested in Luke, you know, she just kind of got her feathers ruffled about that somehow. And even Mon Mothma was kind of like, are you not trusting this girl because you don't think you should trust her or because you don't like her?
Well, we don't find out that they're brother and sister until Jedi. So
right.
This is perfect. It's perfect.
Right. But that's what's so cool is that, you know, going back and looking at this, like these are the sort of things that would be going on. There'd be a little bit of sexual tension there, potentially. I mean, it's weird, but it's true. There totally would be. Yeah, and can I say something? I love that in comic books, the women get to be so hot because Leia's smoking hot in this.
Well, I like the fact that she's a strong female.
No, I thought that she was extra special hot in this. Like, I
never got that.
Really? Oh, yeah. Man. I thought she
didn't have the buns. That's what's missing for you is the hair buns.
No, I mean, the flight suits fit really well. The back to tank scene was like, much more sexy somehow. Like maybe I'm just like a really, really geeky creep, but
yeah, I think
you're
so.
All, yeah.
I didn't get that at all.
I don't know. I mean, there wasn't a lot of sexualization. I feel like in
they
the
were
films,
drawn attractively,
and this in here they were drawn attractively because that's sort of you know the right of comic books is to make the women and the men hot.
What if Leia looked like you know Jabba?
Let's not do that.
Would they be as willing to rescue her?
Like if she had a tail?
If Leia looked like Honey Boo Boo's mom.
Oh my god. She wouldn't fit in the guy. She wouldn't fit in the X-Wing. without butter.
Oh, this just keeps getting worse and worse.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. I really enjoyed the interactions between Han and Chewie. I thought that those were really natural. Mm-hmm. Did you guys hear the voices in your head from the film?
I did. I heard Chewie.
I totally did. I heard Chewie and Han.
Every time I read something, where you know, it's like that. Yeah.
You know, I heard all that stuff.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know? It's totally ingrained in there, which is great.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely interesting.
Yeah, I would highly recommend this. Anybody that's a Star Wars fan, it's filling in a dark corner of Star Wars that hasn't,
The artist for the first six was okay, but I thought it really improved when they changed the artist in 7, 8, and 9.
I would agree.
Yeah.
And the art was good, but some of the layouts were a little off. Like, I remember, nitpicking in issue one, there's a scene of the Star Destroyer, and there's, a text box over on the right-hand side that you're obviously supposed to read first, but being an American comic, it's totally on the wrong side. And
especially speaking of layout, there was a couple of scenes where I really felt like they were dancing with the text box being a little hard to know what you were supposed to read first, especially with some super, super tall frames. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah.
There was a couple of them that were just epically tall, and it's kind of like, in theory, if this frame is all one frame and all the text is inside that frame and it's the top left frame, I'm just going to read everything into it. But there's a frame once or twice that goes almost all the way to the bottom of this page and has text kind of throughout it peppered down. And then you read all that and kind of in your periphery, you're seeing what's coming after that. And then you got to go back to the top up right hand side and work your way down. And it was just awkward.
I noticed that on some earlier issues. Like, I think it may have been between Brian Wood and the artist. They weren't gelling yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there was a lot of pacing issues. Yeah.
They jumped around, right?
There was a panel that didn't really have any explanation, and then not the next page, but the next panel, they're all somewhere else doing something else, and it's so jarring.
Well, one thing that I thought they did really well, when they got to the end of a couple of issues, they would do this almost like, it reminded me of that television show 24, mm-hmm. where at the end of the episode, they do little boxes of everything that's going on with all the main characters.
Yeah.
And they did that at the end a couple times, where they would have maybe four horizontal panels that would fill the entire width of the page, and they would go, a tension scene of Han and Chewie shooting stuff, and then a tension scene of Luke and Leia floating in space, and then a tension scene of Mon Mothma looking off into the sunset, at the Home One base, and then on the bottom it has Darth Vader looking down to the side and has a little box of him thinking Skywalker. It's that was really cool, but I think you're right about the pacing thing. I remember you and I were talking about in the car, and then when we came into the shop today before we started recording, we were saying, what was with them jumping around so much? And then I specifically said, all of a sudden they're on Tatooine, out of nowhere,
She's in the tank.
She's in the back of the tank, all jacked up, and then bang, the next issue, she's off with Luke on Tatooine, and Justin yells from the other room, yeah, what was that about?
I'm like, where? Yeah, because, well, and then I...
Well, that was issue 7. Which would be the first issue after the trade.
Right. So it's
1 through 6. So I think you can see that a certain amount of time had passed.
Sure.
Even though they didn't, say 2 months later, down the road.
Yeah, they could have said something though. They didn't though. They could have said, something as simple as 2 months later or whatever. But it's just, I don't know. And there was a couple times where it was just kind of ping, 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 and it just jumped around and, I don't know, assumed that you just figure it out. I felt like it was a little bit at times rigorous for a lazy reader to be able to keep up with who's where and what's going on and, how much time has passed between things.
I felt like in certain areas they did a really good job with that, because it would be like the little yellow box would tell you sort of where they're at. And if you missed that or you were kind of skimming over it, you might have an issue with that. But I didn't really find myself having a hard time doing that.
I think that's why some of the transitions felt so jarring, is because throughout most of the comic, it did a really good job of giving little text details about, who's here, why they're there, what's going on. And then a couple of panels didn't have that, and it just made it feel really off.
Yeah, it's weird when you get to a new page and there's something different and you have to kind of go back and go, okay, what just happened?
But when
you transitioned, and I think it's maybe when the writer doesn't get out of their head just enough to remind you that, oh, by the way, this is a new scene or something going on differently.
Well, when the last, 20 pages have all done that, and then there's one that doesn't, I think that's what kind of throw me off.
Yeah, they move away from their convention that they've sort of established a pace. And then again, you get there and you're like, wait, hold on. Where did we go? Now, I didn't realize that until John said something that book 7 was a different, it was a different storyline. I didn't even notice that there was different art until looking back over it again and realizing that, I actually liked the art in the first 6 a lot better. I think the ships were amazing looking. The facial features and the way that people looked at each other and stuff like that. I thought that was really great. And so I guess I got to do a better job of paying attention to what, you know, the like where the artists are changing, because that throws me off in other books too, where I'm like, you know, didn't you guys notice that this looks like crap now, or, you know, or it looks so different?
Yeah, you know, I've got like, oh, yeah, well, to sort of artist. Let it roll, you know? You know, I came off of really digging into comics, you know, in Japanese comics, where it is the same artist for the most part, or there's pains taken to make it all sort of uniform artistically. And American comics go out of their way to make it clear that they're the same characters, but a lot of the time the styles change pretty dramatically. It's like a rough edge that I'm slowly sanding off and becoming more and more comfortable with. Mm-hmm. One thing that we were just talking about, the little narrator boxes, right? One thing that came up in issue 8 that had me cracking up was as Chewie is just trying to escape away from Bossk, the Trandoshan bounty hunter. The story was just showing Han trying to fight his way out away from dealing with Boba Fett, right? And so he ends up blowing up the ship that he was on and getting a little bit of an upper hand against Boba Fett. And then it shifts down to Chewie, and it says, "Chewie, where are you?" And then below it, it says, like the actual narrator has a little moment of hilarity where he says, "Chewbacca is a Wookiee. Bossk, the infamous Trandoshan bounty hunter, hates Wookiees, and this is not the first time he's faced the Millennium Falcon. Vengeance is a powerful motivator," and it just goes on, but it's just kind of like, I mean, it was still straight and to the point, and not dry, but, you know, clear, which is what a good narrator should be, but I kind of like that little, "Chewbacca's a Wookiee. Trask hates Wookiees." Like, Trandoshans just don't like them. It's just kind of like, it's just funny, you know?
And did you notice he has a bunch of Wookiee faces hanging in his cockpit?
Oh, yeah, shit.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
Yeah.
I just noticed that.
Wookiee trophies.
Yeah.
That's sort of horrible.
Yeah. Not like skulls, they're faces.
They did such a good job with having the fighting seem dynamic and not shying away from the copious amounts of detail on the ships and the cities and stuff. Like, man. That was really cool.
Yeah, everything looks really good. And I like, you know, there's some very clever navigation in terms of the way that they solve problems and, you know, get out of some pretty hairy fights, which is really cool.
Yeah, in the last issue that we were able to read, 9, which, when does 10 come out? Pretty couple weeks
ago? 9 just came out last week.
Okay.
So we're all caught up to date.
So in 9, they actually have Leia meet the gentleman who created or designed the laser beam cannon that was on the Death Star that destroyed her planet. And he also happens to be from Alderaan.
Right.
And he has this old ship from the Old Republic, and he's been collecting artifacts from Alderaan.
Right.
And he's floating around in the wreckage of Alderaan. They just happened to, or she just happened to run into him there, and he figures out who she is, and it's clear that they're going to have an interesting exchange. And it just barely started in this issue, and I'm really looking forward to the next issue to find out what happens next, because it's just so interesting.
I'm definitely looking forward to that. So yeah, this is a good cliffhanger.
Cool. I love it.
For the most part, I think we really enjoyed this. The trade of issues 1-6 just came out today as we speak. It'll be a week from today when you listen to this.
Highly recommended.
Check it out. I don't know what we're going to be talking about next week yet.
It's a surprise.
It'll be a surprise.
May the Schwartz be with you.
No, we have to watch that now.
I can watch Spaceballs
anytime. Yeah. Is that on the list of
Spaceballs? Yeah.
I mean, basically any Mel Brooks movie.
Yeah, those are great. This is one of those movies where you don't always think to turn it on, but if it happens to be on, you're down for the duration. It's like, whatever I was doing, now I'm watching this.
Ludicrous speed.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
See you next time.